Welcome along to the Care Team Sessions podcast. This is a podcast of talks from our monthly CPD events. For those that aren't already familiar with us, the West Midlands Care Team is a charity pre-hospital enhanced care team operating in the Birmingham area for over 30 years now. Care Team Sessions CPD events have something for all clinical levels, from community responders right through to experienced in-hospital clinicians, along with medics from other services like police and fire. We want to share the team's knowledge and experience with you, so Care Team Sessions is free to attend or to listen back to on this podcast. It's also an opportunity to raise money for the charity, which would help us to continue to do the work we do. If you'd like a CPD certificate for listening to this podcast, we ask for a donation of £5. Details of how to donate and claim your certificate are in the podcast description. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media, search at WM Care Team. Enjoy the podcast.
So, the surgical sieve. Try not to use this as anything more than, depending on what level you are, and it was Adrian Noon, who was a doc from Heartland at the time, that I was a trainee, and even he said, when you're at the end of the bed scratching your head, and I'd never heard of a surgical sieve back then, and it was him and a paediatric consultant that we had a pre-alert, and we're going to talk through this case and how we applied this sieve, and I'd never heard of it. And he said, don't just use it as a structured approach to kind of find a differential diagnosis. You can use this to kind of go as wide as you like or as narrow as you like, i.e. what is the cause of an unconscious patient? If you kind of take a step back, now you can't take a step back while you've got somebody unconscious in front of you. So this is why it's more of a, you could argue more of a study kind of tool rather than you've exhausted all kind of knowledge. You're quite lucky in pre-hospital care. Everything's didactic, unless you're a team lead or you're leading the team. Unless you're kind of on the outside of that circle and you're not eyes in, you can start applying this process. And although there's lots of mnemonics out there, you actually use this with the four H's and four T's. The reversible causes of cardiac arrest is pretty much a surgical sieve. Your patient's dead, you've got to kind of find a structured way of going through how you undead them. That's a word. There's lots of mnemonics are available. Midnight Vindicate, Vitamin C Diff, which is terrible, and Three Scotland. The one we're going to use, which is most appropriate to pre-hospital care because it's quite broad, is minutes. And we'll come to the kind of breakdown of what minutes mean, what minutes means shortly. I like using this as a reflective tool. And I think what you're kind of going to do is, you can't really sit there whilst you have somebody collapse when there's two of you. But if you've got like a more of an MDT around the bed, you've done the resuscitation phase, and you're kind of struggling to say, what is wrong with this patient? This is where you can really apply it. It's got its limitations, and the pitfall is both ends of the scale. So you can only apply this if you've got the knowledge to apply it. So what you don't want is this Dunning-Kruger, which arguably a lot of us fell to originally, where we sit university, get all this knowledge, and we think that's the pinnacle of our career. We hit the road or drop into ED, it must be this diagnosis. And we do that at the other end of the scale anyway, where you're expert in your field, and you see consultants do this as well, where pattern recognition, cognitive bias, and you come to a diagnosis, where really we've gone from A to Z and missed all that alphabet in between. This is only as good as what you can apply to it. And that's what I use it for. So if I have an unconscious patient, let's just say that I've got some strange and weird and wonderful metabolic disorder that an endocrinologist walks in and goes, it's this. I'll then use this sieve to go through, I don't know, let's use what could cause a bulky pancreas, and then you can apply the sieve to that kind of pitfall as well. So what does it stand for? Don't just kind of apply it for conditions. You can apply it to symptoms, you can apply it to signs, but the actual breakdown would be metabolic. So metabolic causes of X, infection. So local infections, systemic infections. And again, we kind of look at these as quite broad, and we hit sepsis, and we kind of hit local infections for us would be cellulitis. But there's pitfalls within this. And I suppose as an analogy, there was four people around a bed not so long back discussing a 30-year-old male who was a lactate of 8. Muse, not overly dramatic, but tachy, temp, borderline BP, with arguably four different diagnostics, but nobody had bothered to look at this gentleman's arm. and the pain was disproportionate. And then we did look at his arm, and then we had, it could be a DVT, it could be a thrombus, but arguably we'd all missed that absolute trigger of pain that was totally disproportionate, and it ended up being necrophage. Quite simple diagnosis that we'd all kind of gone from A to Z with cognitive bias. Neoplasms, we're looking at primary and secondary. And when we kind of apply this as well to metabolic, I don't want to say syndromes, because it's not a metabolic syndrome, but metabolic disorders, you can have the net tumours, so the neuroendocrine secreting tumours, that they're going to play havoc with your body. But what this should be is, you're not going to find this pre-hospital, but when they hand over, these symptoms that would have been corrected in the resuscitation phase, we can then start looking at. Trauma, well, there's only two types, penetrating. I love being back in Birmingham. Honestly, I've had a Taunton accent for 3 days, and I just love being back in Brum. I get to relax. Endocrine and exocrine. And again, love giving sessions on endocrine and exocrine, because you can walk into a room, albeit not this room, but the older we get, and when the endocrine, exocrine kind of disease process takes place, you can look at somebody and pretty much know what's wrong with them, which is a terrible thing to say, but that's the whole point of endocrine, exocrine. And then the systems review is just a set list of questions for each of the systems. So what we don't want to be doing is kind of going over in-depth history taking, because that's what we've done first time around, but maybe some prompts to kind of get those synapses firing that may just prompt another thought process of either the sign or the symptom or the condition that we're asking for. So your systems review, and again, pitch in if you've kind of heard something different for these, but chest pain, for the cardiovascular system, you'd be looking for chest pain, palpitations, collapse. And again, with collapse, that expands a lot further. I mean, nice guidelines, some of them are in-depth, wordy, and not really to the point. I really, really advocate for the TLOC guidelines with NICE. I think they give you a really good systematic approach of why somebody's lost consciousness. Respiratory, any cough, sputum, blood, or shortness of breath. Neuro, fits, faints, and funny turns, and headaches. Headaches, again, we always get to the thunderclap headache. It has to be an SAH. But headaches can be caused by X amount of different reasons that they're not always neurological in nature. And then GIGU. So abdominal pain, weight loss, again, blood, dysuria, discharge, and smell. Again, how you accumulate those questions is absolutely your skill set. Any questions so far, or is that pretty much straightforward? Methodical approach, wonderful. We're going to talk through a case. This was the first case where I was exposed by Adrian New. Now, Adrian New to me, as I mean, Carl will know, and there's a few others that may know, he was my kind of, everybody has their first hero, and he was absolutely mine. He was a good friend of Keith Porter's, and he was somebody that you looked up to, but even he was stumped with this case. So there's a pre-alert coming. This was Heartlands many years ago, 5 years of age, unconscious, was given GCS of 3. Pews of 3, overly dramatic. All of the OBs were NAD, and I think all of the OBs, if I remember right, were very much vague. Now, I had this as a case, and I got the actual case form on my laptop, but that's in Devon, unfortunately. He was found in a field. He was playing with his friends. It was summer, playing with his friends, and he just became tired, lay down, and that's exactly how they found him. No real past medical history that was given, no regular medications that were prescribed. He got a grass allergy. Now, unless he's been attacked by a long piece of grass in this field, I don't think that was his cause. He's been on holiday, but he's been back 2 weeks. And the top-to-toe kind of examination that he had pre-hospital and in hospital didn't really reveal any kind of injury. But he was, I think, arguably a GCS 5 or 6, but maintaining his own airway. He'd kind of rose, but then become very hypertonic. He'd open his eyes, and then he'd have this lid lag. And his blood sugar, albeit was 6 with us, had been reported to be around 3.8 with the crew, and I think they just kind of rubbed some hypostop into his gums and brought him to us. He wasn't cannulated on arrival. Again, please join in, even if you're pre-hospital crews. If you're kind of now faced with a paediatric, what other OBS or kind of scans or interventions or investigations would you like from this case so far? That's exactly where you're silence as well. You've still got an unconscious kid. You've still got an unconscious child at the end of the bed. You're pretty much stuck in not doing a CT head, big cause of unconsciousness, as something happened. We kind of forget that six-year-olds can have all the horrible pathology that happens to us happen to them, and then some. It's a very small minority, but it does happen. So what's common is common, arguably. So CT was discussed with radiology. This was Heartlands. Back then it was still queuing ambulances. So we're waiting. CT's booked. Got a chest x-ray, albeit sats were fine. We're breathing relatively okay. Examination well. ECG wasn't overly excited. I think some juvenile T waves that we always pass around ED, but there were juvenile T waves. Paediatrician was there, no problem. Blood sugar was still around 6, and we requested a venous gas at this point. At that point, Mum turned up. So we came in with Dad. Mum turned up. So we applied the sieve. And this is where Adrian Noon tapped me on the shoulder. I'm pretty sure he was already ahead of the game, but he saw the teaching opportunity. So what metabolic causes will cause unconsciousness? Arguably, DKA, electrolyte disturbance. So that's got to say there, because so far we haven't ruled this out. We've asked for a venous gas, we're going to get some electrolytes on it, albeit it's not a gas. and blood's already sent off. So there are metabolic, I don't want to call syndromes, not metabolic syndrome, disorders that can cause unconsciousness, absolutely. But again, unlikely with his history, it was just a little bit odd. Infection, primary, secondary infections. It was afebrile, it wasn't tachycardic, hadn't given a history of infection. Anything local infection-wise, brain abscess maybe, but again, just to go from running around to tired and then flat, a bit odd. Any other local infections you can think of? I don't think so. Neoplasm, so cancers, possibly. You could have a brain tumour. Any secondary tumours that are going to cause unconsciousness? Not too sure, really. Again, the weird and wonderful neuroendocrine tumours, maybe. Iatrogenic causes. Are you happy with the word iatrogenic? So iatrogenic meaning it's healthcare induced. So, and that can be very, very broad. So iatrogenic cause of harm would be, if you needle decompress and there wasn't a pneumothorax and we caused the pneumothorax, you overdose somebody on morphine, you stitch somebody or glue somebody's eyes together. I'm gonna try and keep this light. I'm trying to think of all the things that I've done that I've been iatrogenic cause. If you did an operation and the surgeon kind of left a swab in place. But it can be, I don't know, let's put something soft. Sending somebody home with an ankle sprain that you thought may have had crutches, you didn't give them crutches and they fall and break their ankle. Kind of iatrogenic in some, but anything related to healthcare that we've omitted, essentially. So iatrogenic, he's not on any medications. He's not been in touch with any healthcare professionals recently that we know to. Come back from America, but nothing really happened. So we were kind of stuck now with this venous gas coming back. pH was normal, PO2, albeit it was venous, but it wasn't, you know, dramatic lows. PO2 was fine, give or take it was venous. But we got to this vague low sugar pre-hospital. His sodium was on the low side and his blood pressure, again, albeit Pews was around 3. It was just vaguely low, not dramatically low. We weren't having to do fluid resuscitation. But then you kind of fight, so the synapse start firing now. You've now got like has there been insult to this adrenal axis? Maybe, but why? Why all of a sudden? So Mom turns up clutching, they've been to America. This is not like the UK. You can buy over-the-counter steroids. He's got a grass allergy. He was having havoc over there, crying around Disney apparently. So parents have, it was like a Beconase type spray, but the steroid within it was quite potent. So it was like one spray a day. Decided to kind of, you know, 6 or 7 times a day, and that was daily. They came back with boxes of this because it's, you know, it's cheap in America back then. So since he's been back for the past 2 weeks, it's summer, he's been using his spray. The day before, stopped using his spray. What that's going to do, or what that would have done, is your body's producing its own steroids. Spray, spray, spray. It doesn't need to produce its own steroids anymore. It now turns off its steroid-making process. He's not giving him out his own steroids. Cortisol controls the world, pretty much. Hence, you find this kid unconscious, hypotensive, hypoglycemic. Sodium was on the low side. And then you start thinking, when you've just put this together with an iatrogenic cause of an unconscious 5-year-old, I thought that was amazing from Dr. Noon. This child had steroids and was awake within an hour. There wasn't, obviously, like rounds of applause or anything, but I just thought, how to apply a surgical sieve in such a dramatic child, because my mind was racing, it's meningitis. And my diagnostics back then was quite narrow, as it should be, which brings you back to the Dunning-Kruger. You don't know what you don't know. And the more that you do know, you kind of get And I don't think this ever stops. You kind of, the more that you do know, you realise there's a lot more to know above it. And then the more you do that, you become less risk averse. And then you stop sending people home. It's terrible. So try and walk through this one. This was, I had a lot more related to pre-hospital. This is off the back of an endocrine a chat that we were having. This wasn't so long back, a 45-year-old female, history of vasovagals when stressed, has never been really tested for it. Just, you know, the GP has accepted that she gets a bit excited or feels a bit cold, and there she goes. So she stood up quickly, walked into the shower, was witness to collapse, was witness to be hit a head, witness to be unconscious. The ambulance crew had been queuing for 8 hours outside of a certain hospital called SDEC. And we said, well, she's a faint, she's recovered, send her in. They failed to admit that she was still having postural drops, I think from like 120 systolic to 60, and she was snore. They omitted that part in the ambulatory care, but we took it nonetheless. It's the best to be in hospital than out, I guess. But she was recovering slowly, so CT head, CT facial bones, because it warranted it. It was quite nasty trauma. Neck was fine. So we got to the point of, again, really vague history, taking HRT, but doesn't really take it. GP had diagnosed high blood pressure 2 months ago, given some ramipril, but she's not really taking it. She thinks she's stressed. I'm also taking potassium supplements because I've been told potassium's low. And you just start thinking, well, I don't think this has caused you to collapse today. Your history is very much vasovagal. You stood quickly, you've gone from cold to a red hot shower. You had the prodrome of, you know, I feel dizzy, I started to sweat. We didn't know if the LOC was where you've hit your head or you actually physically got. I'm guessing with the systolic of 120 to 60 that quickly, it would have been the blood pressure maybe. But that's recovered. So we're happy, like, from a systemic point of view, but just digging a little bit more with this lady. So again, we managed to take, there's like med students, student paramedics from Bristol. We were able to take them through, because this lady's well known, back to the office. We had an endocrinologist with us as well. But take them through the sieve, and it was nice to go metabolic, iatrogenic, and we got to the point of really vague low potassium that's never really been investigated. You're going to lose potassium, well, one of two ways. The ways that we see would be DMV, if you sweat a lot, or eat lots of licorice, albeit. But you normally through gastric loss, so we lose potassium, or there's something endocrine or metabolic taking place. She's got high blood pressure. She had arguably low potassium. This then prompted the further tests. So from a pre-hospital point of view, absolutely, you won't be doing these. From an ED point of view, you shouldn't be doing these because you're shooting running ED now. You need to get to the next patient. But in SDEC, this is perfect medicine for us. So we were able to go, well, before we just ping you off, because it's a little bit vague to an endocrinologist, let's start looking at your potassium creatinine ratios. Let's look at your renin-aldosterone ratios. And then we got to the point of it could be primary aldosteronism. How we get to that from somebody who's had a faint, I just thought it was quite good that we had the time to take somebody through the surgical sieve. There's a couple of more cases that we took from, and I think this was for more of the student paras in the room. And this is, how do I say this without coming across as condescending? Do you know how we teach systems, i.e. take a full history, follow that system, and then the examination, there's a process in place. Not many people teach the same way anymore. There's very little uniformity, but even to the niches of approaching the patient from the right side. If you go to a GP surgery, or albeit how EDs used to be designed, this is old hat, but the bed was always on the right-hand side. You always position the patient at 45 degrees. That's out the window. You can't do that when somebody's like killed in a ball under a bus. It'd be difficult to shake the hand from the right-hand side. But the take-home from the majority of these cases, when we're taking handover, they're fully dressed. So always undress your patient. Get the skin, not in minus 8 degrees, but have a look at the patient. This 80-year-old male was fantastic to take through a surgical sieve, purely because he'd been working with chest pain. And he was crying. Bit of dementia in the background, so it's quite hard to get any history. But he'd had all of the tests under the sun. He'd been dragged out of his care home because he was crying, you know, holding his chest. And if we'd have just got to the point of actually taking a bit of the history was fine from the crew, it was quite solid. We've done like a million TROPs, the random D-dimer, because everyone has a D-dimer. His ECG got left bundled, but he's 80, that's okay. So all of this had kind of prompted, but if we'd have just unzipped his clothes and had a look at his back, and this part of his chest, because, you know, The ED ECG arguably can be lasered, and it's just kind of everything's there. That's a terrible picture of a heart. But if we just looked, he got a big zoster rash, and if we'd have applied a surgical sieve, albeit we miss out, and that's where its limitations is, we miss out the biggest organ of skin. But if we just looked, a big zoster rash was causing his pain. We sent him home. He didn't need 8 hours. He didn't need to come out in the cold. He didn't need all these random D-dimers where people were requesting CTPAs. Arguably, he didn't need antivirals at this stage because I think we're like about eight days in. So just the take home is, if you're taught a system, use it for a while, because I think through cognitive bias, you can go from point A to point Z and miss quite a lot of the picture. And you find it a lot in ED. I think I put my own hand up. I've worked with some fantastic clinicians, but the decision making on nights where there's not many of you, and if you're the reg as well, and your consultants have gone home, quite rightly, they've earned that, but you're the reg looking after a busy ED, worrying about what's on the ambulances, worrying about the sickest patient in the waiting room, also thinking about you've got to look after the juniors, then you're faced with that sick patient in rhesus and everything else that's going around. That CRM, the human factors involved, is absolutely horrendous. That's at the point where that 80-year-old male with vague abdo pain or vague chest pain becomes one of the most difficult patients to see in your department. That's where we are in acute med. You come in at 8 o'clock and you start going through your referrals, and you're like, really? You referred this? And then conversely, you go, well, that's nice, a Monday morning. You've even written in your notes, query SOL, so space occupying lesion to the head, or the brain, I should say, not just the head. But you've decided they can wait 48 hours. I never kick that clinician. You never go back to that clinician, because to making those decisions on nights is probably the worst dynamic you can work with them. Sorry, I've digressed. What I wanted to use the next 5 minutes for, and this was the legacy slide, we do have time, was just to open the floor to you. We wanted to keep it nice and light. Any experiences, any kind of questions of what happens next to the patients when you bring them in, any kind of thought process in your, I guess, algorithms or JL Calc, that you'll see that breadth of JL Calc being stretched as well. Any questions from you guys that you'd want to discuss, open to the floor, debate? Thank you, thank God, somebody's put a hand up, sorry.
Is there anything that paramedics you think could be better before coming outpatient?
Any other question? Oh, sorry.
Anything
paramedics, there's something coming through. From this is me digressing, so please bring me back. There's a new buzzword in the NHS, and you'll hear resilience, and there's loads over the years, and ultimately it's doing the same things that we've done historically, just with a different brand. But there's something coming through at the moment that's being used, is civility, and I think the way care team do it really well, and that's drummed into every shift now. There's a conversation of, when you go to a crew, it's not about taking over, it's about how you interact with the crew and add value to the crew, and vice versa. We're going to learn a lot from you. So I think from what paramedics should do is A, accept criticism, and it's horrible because you go through uni as you're the paramedic, and I'll put my hands up here. I've made some absolutely, I won't say mistakes, but the most embarrassing part from me, which brought me back down to earth, was Keith Porter, pre-alerted with a 50-year-old male, his GCSE3, on a bus. He's a big guy, so, you know, we've got this guy downstairs and his ECG's fine, his GC's pale, he's sweaty. We've pre-alerted, heroics got there, this fluid's up for no reason, it's just because I wanted to. But back then it's what we did. And we get there, Keith Porter literally just walks in. You're right, Greg? Yeah, fine. What's his BM? And I just crawled into my shoe. And his BM was 1, he had glucose, he went home before it even booked clear. And that brought me back to earth of not applying the sieve, but just slowing yourselves down. The one thing that we don't take is criticism very well. So I think there's crews when we pre-alert, and that works both ways, where you'll hear, I'm not going to say the nurse, because it could be a doctor or whoever, picks the phone up, what are they alerting me this shit for? You've got no idea what they've seen there and then. They may not have been breathing when you got there. And your gestalt, as in, the numbers might look okay, but the patient looks absolutely awful. I don't think we do paramedics justice in that respect. On the flip side, asthmatics and hydrocort, or COPD and hydrocort, where you could have just given them a squidgy out of 100. It's not, in the defensiveness. So I think just dropping that and opening a dialogue is the take home, because we're going to learn lots. This is where JLK can be quite restrictive for you, but everybody's got pain if they need paracetamol. you know, and give people steroids, it's not going to kill them, arguably. Any questions, folks? Wonderful.
That's it for this Care Team Sessions podcast. You'll find information on how to get your CPD certificate in the podcast description. If you've enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss any future episodes. You can also follow us on social media at WM Care Team. Thanks for listening.